Funding for On Point provided by Liberty Mutual Insurance for auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The White House promised an end of November fix to the disastrous rollout of healthcare.gov and Obamacare. This weekend, the administration was claiming success, a site that will work smoothly for the vast majority of users, it said. But this story is not over. This could mark the moment the Affordable Care Act got back on track and became the future of American healthcare, or when the last best attempt to fix the website, fend off political foes, and fix its reputation sputtered. This hour on Point, healthcare.gov and healthcare reform 2 months in. Jeff Zients, the man in the White House brought in to pull it all together, said yesterday that, hey, it's now working. Healthcare.gov.
Bottom line, healthcare.gov on December 1st is night and day from where it was on October 1st. We've executed hundreds of software fixes and hardware upgrades, and the site is now stable and operating at its intended capacity with greatly improved performance.
Night and day to October 1st? Well, everybody, I suppose, who supports it should hope so. On the other hand, consumers will figure it out, and so will insurers as they go along trying to use it. Not at all clear if Republicans are ready to accept even a fixed version here. Here was Senator Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee, asking if he saw a way to fix rather than repeal the Affordable Care Act. CBS Face the Nation yesterday.
I don't know how you fix it, I'll be honest. I don't know how you fix a program that was put together in this manner with only one side of the aisle and taking the shortcuts that we're taking to put it in place.
Still, no thanks from Bob Corker's side of the aisle. Joining us now from Washington, Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. He's been covering all of this. Noam, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
And with us from Salt Lake City, Dan Schuyler is here. He's a former director of technology for the Utah Health Insurance Exchange, which was the second of its kind in the country when it was created in 2009. He's now a director at Levitt Partners, describes itself as a healthcare intelligence business. Part of his job has been to watch the healthcare.gov rollout and fixes. Dan Schuyler, thank you for joining us.
Tom, thank you. Appreciate being here.
So let's go to the technical first. Noam, you've got the whole picture here, but Dan, just on the claims of upgrades, repairs, hundreds of fixes, it's now working for the majority of users. Have you been on? Have you looked? Do these look ring true, Dan?
Well, I have done some initial high-level testing at home, and compared to October 1st, the platform healthcare.gov is running much more efficiently than it was on October 1st. Very little delays between the different pages. You can create a user account. You can log back in, which you couldn't do before. And you can start the enrollment process by entering your information and going through the plan selection process. So it's definitely a far cry from where it was on October 1st. Much improved, much faster. And we'll just have to see when we start seeing large enrollments on a daily basis, if the system will be able to sustain that type of volume.
Of course, to be a lot better than October 1st is or is not saying a whole lot. It all depends. You can start enrollment now. Are people flowing all the way through? Do you know? Is it possible to test the claims that 50,000 people can be on there using it, working through to a conclusion?
Well, we do know that the insurance carriers, the issuers, are receiving applications from consumers that have completed the enrollment process. We've also heard from insurance carriers that they're getting calls from consumers who said that they've completed the process, but the carriers don't have any record of them completing that process. Now, that was before the improvements that were made over the weekend, upgrades that they did over the weekend to rectify and resolve some of the back-end issues that were affecting the issuers or the carriers, if you will. So we'll have to see over the next couple of days or the next week if those back-end fixes resolve the issue that the issuers are having where they weren't receiving the applications or the applications were coming in with errors. And if that indeed has been fixed, that will definitely resolve a major part of the back-end problem.
Noam Levy, you're watching there in Washington. Claims of, you know, success, of course, they're easy to make. The proof will be in the pudding.
Do you have, can anybody have yet, a real understanding, Noam, of whether or not this is fixed to the point that it will function sufficiently to let Americans who want to come in considerable numbers and sign up?
Well, I think, you know, Dan is right to say the proof will be in the pudding. There's sort of two tests, I think, of whether or not the site is working the way it needs to be. Dan alluded to them. One, of course, is can people get through the site without running into error messages or pages that time out or get kicked off of the site, as was the case throughout October. The initial indications are that things are much better, although I think it is worth noting that the administration is still conceding what they call an error rate of 0.75% on average per page, which may not sound like very much, but it is important to keep in mind that this is an incredibly complex site, and the simple act of creating an account, going through the process of entering tax and other demographic information, and then shopping for health plans can require more than 100 pages. So once you multiply that error rate, it is actually not that unlikely that someone will run into an error message even now, although it is, as Dan said, much, much, much better than it was in October, when I think it's fair to say it just basically didn't work. The back-end fixes that Dan alluded to are still a source of a lot of anxiety among insurers, specifically because they have not been able to validate a lot of the information that's coming through, at least the insurers that I've talked to, and they're still quite concerned about that, particularly as a large number of consumers come through the site over the next few weeks. Many of the insurers have gotten a relatively low number of people coming through and then are able to validate that information directly with consumers because they're not being faced with that many applications. But if there are a huge number and there continue to be accuracy issues, then I think the next major headache for the administration and the law will be people who think they have insurance or who think they are due a certain amount of subsidy and they can't get it. So we'll have to see how that kind of rolls out over the next few weeks and into January when coverage starts.
So in the heat of the crisis, when this was not working at all as promised in early October, end of November was the promised date. Can the Obama administration unfurl the mission accomplished banner now? Are they doing that, Noam?
Well, I think there's no question that they are unfurling the banner. You know, one thing that's been very frustrating for many of us who have tried to follow the progress and the problems with this website has been the administration's lack of transparency about how well this site is working. And I hate to say it, but I think some of that continues. The administration promised somewhat cryptically that the site would be working for the vast majority of users. And when we sought to try to get a little bit more clarity about what that meant, the administration said that 80% of people would be able to enroll online. But when I asked that question to the administration over the weekend, continued to sort of get a bit of an evasive answer about whether or not that was actually happening. I think the other issue here that continues to be a problem, as I mentioned before, is the accuracy of the information that's being transmitted to insurers. And clearly the administration knows what the error rate is in the transmission of that data, but they're not sharing it.
Noam, leave aside political opposition for just a moment here. We know that's not the real world, but for just a moment, let's say there was no political friction here. Nevertheless, this has to work well enough for certain numbers to mount up. Does it appear that they're on track technically to allow the intake of applicants, if they show up, that would allow them to get the critical mass they need for this whole program to work?
Well, so they've set a goal of getting 7 million people nationally by the end of March into these state-based marketplaces. And, of course, the mix of those people is important. You need to have younger people coming in. You need to have healthier people coming in to make these risk pools work the way actuaries believe they need to. The start in October was very, very slow, 27,000 people coming in the 36 states that are relying on this website as the main entry point. So whether they can recover in time over the next few months to get to where they need to is unclear, although I think there are some hopeful signs in the sense that there clearly has been an acceleration in the number of people getting in compared to October. And if the experience of some of the states like California, which are running their own marketplaces, is any indication, the trend is definitely upward. So I think there are some hopeful signs that they may get enough people, but there's a lot of people are going to have to be able to get through between now and the end of March.
And what about GOP opposition? We've read about waves of attacks planned on different angles of Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, to try and beat it down before it can really get established. Are they positioned to follow through on those attacks?
I think actually probably less so than they have been in the past. The government shut down earlier this fall, and the general consensus on the Republican side of the aisle, at least on the leadership in the leadership offices, that was a strategic error and a political failure, I think will temper some of the calls from Obamacare's strongest opponents to go to the mat again to try to stop it. I think the hope at this point on the Republican side of the aisle is that the fixes will not be adequate, that not enough people will show up, and that the bugs that continue to dog the system will be sufficiently problematic that come next fall when the midterm elections come, that will swing again towards the Republican side and strengthen opposition.
We're looking at healthcare.gov and healthcare reform 2 months in. A big deadline passed over the weekend, technical fixes, but how far has this gone? Have you logged on lately, over the weekend, last night, today? What have you found at healthcare.gov? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about healthcare.gov. Some very political interpretation, maybe in both directions, but we want to hear what the political opponents and supporters are thinking as we see the White House working, struggling at times, to make this thing work. Marsha Blackburn joins us right now from Brentwood, Tennessee, Republican Congresswoman representing Tennessee's 7th District. Marsha Blackburn, thank you very much for being with us, Congresswoman.
It's good to be with you. Thank you.
So I'm sure you have been listening to the reports of fixes, the times that are diminished and down, the error rates that are reportedly diminished here. What do you see after 2 months of scrambling around to make this thing work right, Congresswoman?
Well, I think what they did was to come in and try to manage expectations. And for 80%, the estimation is for 80% of those that log on, it is going to work. The portion that is up is going to work. Now, they have completely eliminated the small business portals, and those are not going to be operational for another year. So still, we find ourselves in with these adjusted expectations. You've got them working 80% of the time, and the whole ball of wax is not working. It wasn't ready for prime time. It should have been delayed for a year, and they chose not to do that. And now we're finding out from the insurers that data transfer to them is not properly working. And so now they're hearing from HHS that they're going to manually deliver those subsidies, that this will not be handled via the website.
Right. So I know you've been a very tough critic. Yeah. At an 80%, if it's working for 80%, you've been a tough critic, but is it working for 80% a high enough success rate that you see this whole program settling in, becoming the established law and way of the land?
Well, no, and let me tell you why. Look at what this has cost the taxpayer. First of all, with the actual dollar cost, you're talking about upwards, what we know so far, of $600 million for a website that doesn't work, $4.4 billion that were sent to the states for the state websites that do not interface and do the appropriate transfer with the federal site. And still, you have those that are to deliver the insurance product, and they are not working with the site. So basically, what you have at this point is an aggregator site that will give you shopping information that works for 80% of those that log on. The balance of that does not work. The security provisions are not there. The transfer rights are not in place. The transfer of data transmission is not in place. And the entire small business component, which is a large portion of the individual insurance market, does not work.
I mean, I guess we heard that, and we've got it. But if you've got 80% logging on and it works for them, I guess I've still got that question. Yes, $600 million for a site that didn't work is really galling. A change is not cheap, but even so, that's galling. But here we are. 2 months ago, it looked as though the GOP might be able to use this, you know, terrible rollout to flip the whole thing right back off the books. At this point, do you think it's going to roll over your opposition, even if it's working imperfectly?
Well, what it's not the GOP using this. It is that the American people have resoundingly spoken and said, we do not want this program. What they have realized is that the president's health care law is the federal government taking charge of their health care. Now, one of the things I have found so interesting in visiting with constituents is they thought this was Medicaid. They did not realize this was about them, and it was going to have profound implications for their health insurance. It was going to escalate the cost, and it was going to diminish their options for both physicians and for hospitals. So we are seeing the impact of that. Secondly, we are seeing the cost of this to our rural hospitals and the way the reimbursement and the access is working. Third, we're seeing an escalation of the enrollees in the Medicaid programs, and there is tremendous concern from the provider community of how they're going to meet the needs of those that are enrolling in Medicaid. The fourth implication I would point out on this is what has happened with opportunity cost, because anytime the federal government moves in and takes control of something, then you have a cost to the private sector because they are not moving in, they are not providing more choice and more options. And what has happened is your choice and your options have been given to the federal government, and they are going to tell you what you can have access to, which is limiting your choice and is limiting your options.
No, stand by for 1 second there,
and saying, yeah, we don't want this.
Noam Levy, you're listening in Washington there. Congresswoman Marsha Blackburn is with us. Is that a fair characterization she's just outlined of the Affordable Care Act's consequence?
I'm not sure where to begin, honestly, but there clearly are a number of issues that the Congresswoman raises having to do with both the marketplaces that are created by the Affordable Care Act as well as the Medicaid expansion. And each of those creates its own dynamics. I guess what I would say is that clearly the Affordable Care Act does have profound implications on the entire healthcare system. Whether you believe that's a good thing or a bad thing probably
depends on where you sit. Is it the federal government reducing your options as a healthcare consumer?
I don't think that that's a fair characterization, frankly. The law expands health coverage to Americans, whether it's through Medicaid or through commercial health insurance. Some of the health plans that are available as a result of the Affordable Care Act will have narrower networks of doctors and providers than existing networks. It should be noted, however, that narrowing of networks is a phenomenon that has been happening already. And for some consumers who will get health insurance for the first time, they will actually have more options.
Yeah. Congresswoman Blackburn,
I respond to that?
Of course.
And give you an example of where it has lessened your options and your choices and has escalated the cost. And repeatedly, as we had hearings on the bill as it was working its way through, and then in doing our due diligence at Energy and Commerce over the law, what I would ask Secretary Sebelius, is there any example on the face of the earth where public option health care has reduced cost, has increased outcomes, and has given more options?
Well, you say on the face of the earth. I mean, in many countries around the world, they have full-on government health care and much better outcomes than the United States.
I would take issue with some of those also and how the stats are reviewed.
But I mean, we have the 26th life expectancy.
Let me continue what... In Tennessee, we had a program called TennCare, which was the test case for Hillary Care. And What happened in Tennessee was that the cost went through the roof. After 5 years, mm-hmm. the cost of the program had quadrupled. We had a Democrat governor who decided to take this program down when it had reached 35.3% of the state's budget. It was unaffordable. It was too expensive. At the same time, we had individuals who saw their access. They had a credit card, if you will. They had a card that gave them access to the queue. What they could not get was access to the physician. Many times they would have to travel 3 or 4 hours to get to someone who was in that network who took TennCare.
I know I've only got you for another minute. Do you think that you will succeed in taking Obamacare down, Congresswoman, or that it will settle in and just become the way we do health care in this country?
No, I don't think that it will be. There are too many problems with the delivery system, with the insurance system. There are problems with the way this law is structured. The escalation in Medicaid enrollment and the lack of those that are buying into the program through insurance, I think that when you get to 2015, the insurance rates are going to be through the roof. People thought the increase in their insurance rates was difficult to manage this year, and I have individuals who have seen insurance rates from 5 to 500% increases. And that is a lot to manage through and to work through, and it has been debilitating to our small business marketplaces. And I'm sure that's why they're going to do a one-year delay on that exchange. But no, I do not think it's going to be the way for business. I think that you can look at the unpopularity of this law and the implementation and the impact as people are learning about it and see that the American people, it won't be Congress, it will be the American people that will demand that Congress remove this from the books.
Well, we will see which way that goes. Marsha Blackburn, Congresswoman from Tennessee's 7th District, joining us from Brentwood, Tennessee. Thank you very much, Congresswoman.
Thank you.
Let's turn now to Kensington, Maryland, and Chris Van Hollen, a Democratic congressman representing Maryland's 8th there. Chris Van Hollen, Congressman, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Good to be with you.
So we are told you've got fixes. You've had a lot of Democrats very upset about how unsuccessful the initial rollout was. Are people in your party feeling better, good enough at this point, about how this is technically working?
Yes, there's no doubt things are looking up. The administration hit its two major benchmarks, 50,000 people on the website at one time, 800,000 a day. I anticipate there will continue to be bumps along the road, and the question is whether our Republican colleagues want to work with us to fix the problems or whether they want to continue to try to use these problems as an excuse to eliminate the entire Affordable Care Act.
Well, they can mount a lot of rhetoric, but in the end of the day, won't it primarily depend on the effectiveness of the program itself?
Yes, it will. And what we know from looking at states like California, like New York, like Kentucky, a number of other states where the websites are up and operating smoothly, is that the underlying program is working well. People are signing up, and the mix of people are signing up in terms of the mix of people in terms of age and demographics.
How do you know that? Because I haven't seen the numbers released to fully demonstrate that. Do you have inside access to numbers here that the press isn't generally getting?
I was talking about the states of California and New York. So,
okay.
For example, in California, yes, they did release numbers showing both good rates of sign-up, but also a good mix of folks signing up, which, of course, is important to insurance companies because they want to make sure they have a risk pool that represents the entire group. And so at least the early signs from those states where the websites are operating smoothly shows that the underlying principles of this are working.
Are you confident in the White House assessment of the quality of the fix to this point? I mean, back in the summer and even later, just weeks and days before healthcare.gov rolled out, there were assurances that it was all going to be great. Are you confident in the assurances that it's good enough this time?
Well, my view at this point, Tom, is that the assurances we get are by actually using the system. And so the reports we're getting from people who are actually having direct use with the system are that the consumer end of it is operating much more smoothly, that it is hitting the benchmarks that they targeted for the end of November.
You need 7 million by March.
There's an ongoing issue that's going to need to be fixed about at the back end of the system, and they're going to have to work overtime to get that, because that, of course, is going to be what ultimately connects the consumer with their health care policy and their doctor.
Right. You need 7 million signed up by March. You need a good mix there. Do you think you'll get 7 million? And if you don't, is the whole program viable?
Well, I don't know whether we'll hit 7 million. That, of course, was the estimate the Congressional Budget Office provided when it did its analysis. As you just suggested, the most important thing is actually the mix of people signing up. So, yes, we want to try and hit as big a number as possible in terms of the total sign-up. The most important thing in terms of this working in the short term is making sure the risk pool is diverse. So, look, the fact that we hit these benchmarks today is a very important milestone along that path.
Republicans still planning to fight this hard. Where do you see the most vulnerability in terms of a partisan or politically channeled attack on Obamacare at this point?
Well, Tom, I had to, chuckle a little bit when Marsha Blackburn said this wasn't a political issue, this wasn't the GOP. I have in front of me something entitled The House Republican Playbook that was issued by the House Republican Whip Eric Cantor, talking about how they're going to go against Obamacare at every twist and every turn. And so there's no doubt that Republicans are determined to try and undermine this effort. After all, they did shut down the government last October in an effort to try and undo the entire thing. So one of the challenges is that we're getting no cooperation from them when it comes to trying to fix it. In fact, there are many efforts around the country to try and sabotage it. I mean, you've got groups trying to discourage young people from signing up, that kind of thing. So, look, that obviously means that we're working in a political headwind. But as you indicated, I think the real test will be whether people can sign up and get access to this insurance. And there are lots of stories rolling in about Americans who had been denied health insurance because they had pre-existing conditions, who now finally have the comfort of knowing they have affordable health care.
So what's the prognosis here, doctor? Is this thing out of the woods? Is it on the rails to healthy implementation, or are you still withholding judgment?
Tom, I think this is a major milestone, but they're going to have to continue to work really hard on the technical aspects of this. As I said, I do believe that where the states that are up and running show that the underlying concept and product is sound, and again, we know this was, of course, modeled on Romney Care in Massachusetts. It's been successful there. So what we hope is that they can get the technical fixes. The next big challenge, of course, is this: at the end of the system, the output, making sure there's the connection to the insurance companies. And the administration is going to have to double down on that.
Chris Van Hollen, Congressman from Maryland's 8th District, thank you very much for joining us today on healthcare.gov. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about healthcare.gov and healthcare reform 2 months in. It has been a tumultuous 2 months. Things really did not work when it rolled out on October 1st at the website, which was supposed to be the major funnel in. All kinds of response here. Noam and Dan. David says, my wife and I enrolled last week. No problems. Much gratitude, as we had been without for years. But another listener says, my nephew's been trying to sign up for over a month. No success. He calls the 800 number. They reset his information. He re-enters all the information. Still doesn't work. And on we go. Mark says, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. But a lot of other people say, bring it on. The country of many minds on this. Karen in Waynesboro, Tennessee. Karen, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to clarify, I'm in Marsha Blackburn's district, and I just wanted to clarify, first of all, not everybody in her very conservative district feels as she does, that this whole thing is a bust. I think it's a wonderful start. It's certainly needed. Before this, the Affordable Care Act, we actually had very little choice in health care. My husband and I had our insurance premiums going up every year astronomically. This was before Obamacare. And when we asked Marsha Blackburn what could be done about it, she said, oh, sign up for a health savings account, which we discovered when we did our homework on it was actually more expensive than our already expensive insurance. So, and she talked about problems with that hospitals would have under Obamacare, but the main reason that hospitals will be having problems like in our little rural area is because our governor has not taken the Medicaid money. So that's a problem. And then her thing on 10 care was our state's Medicaid program was just so actually misleading, because what happened was it was mismanaged horribly by a Republican governor, because he thought it, you know, government can't do anything, so he didn't bill the people who should have been billed for the service, for the insurance.
Karen, we've got it. I mean, management is a lot, maybe everything here. Of course, there have been a lot of questions about management raised in these first 2 months of Obamacare as well, as it didn't perform as promised. I mean, Noam, there's a particular policy on the line here, and also sort of an understanding of government's capacity to act effectively that is being judged here at the same time, Noam.
No question about that. And I mean, I think it's hard to, you know, it's hard to overstate how big a management failure the rollout of this website was. Van Hollen is absolutely correct that Republicans have been working night and day for 3.5 years to undermine the law and to make its implementation as difficult as possible. That dynamic should not be misunderstood, but it's also true that it's still, I must say, a bit of a mystery how the Obama administration could have missed the mark as dramatically as it did.
Don in Charlotte, North Carolina. Don, thank you for calling. What's your experience?
Well, my experience has been that we're in the process of signing up, and we've had some difficulty with that. But I feel confident that it's going to result in some insurance.
Don, why are you signing up here? Why are you signing up here instead of with an employer or some other way?
Well, unfortunately, I'm on Social Security, but I'm in that basket between age 62 and age 65.
Yep.
My wife had breast cancer in 2007, and we had to drop our insurance because I lost my job and was not able to continue the premium, which was like $1,650.
Yeah.
We got through the breast cancer thing okay, but now we can't get coverage on our own because of the pre-existing condition, mm-hmm. and no one will insure her because of the previous breast cancer experience.
So have you gone on healthcare? Have you gone on healthcare.gov, Don? What have you found?
Yes, we've signed up, and we're waiting for our the tax benefit that we're supposed to be getting. And as soon as we get that, we'll hopefully get signed up.
What was the process like for you, Don?
Earlier in October, when we tried, it was difficult. I'll be the first to admit. But recently, I was able to get through the entire process. It didn't really take that long as far as signing up. The holdup seems to be now as to the processing the application from the standpoint we're eligible, as what it's telling us, but we still haven't gotten word on what the tax credit is going to be.
Right. Donna, good luck to you there. I appreciate your call. Dan, there's a lot of talk about the back end. I mean, there's, I suppose, a couple of back end avenues here. One is for the government to crunch all that data on the individual and let them know exactly what it's going to cost. The other is to get integrated with the insurance companies. You know, today it may sound as though, well, the back end still needs work, but that could turn out to be a big problem of its own, Dan. What about the outlook for getting that together so that it works properly?
So, Tom, as Jeffrey Zients said, 20% of consumers won't use the online portal or won't be able to because of specific situations. And what he was referring to was complex eligibility scenarios. Just a high-level example of a complex eligibility scenario would be an individual who has an inconsistent residency or job history, hasn't filed a tax return, has a family of four or more, and there's some inconsistent data there. The system isn't designed to be able to rectify or reconcile all of that information, and that would be a case where manual intervention would have to come into play, where the consumer would have to call the call center and work through those inconsistencies to find out how much of a subsidy they are eligible for. And as the technologies improve, we'll see a more real-time system that can process that. But right now, the technologies are not at a state where they can do these eligibility determinations for every single individual, because there are so many complexities in determining these eligibility scenarios for some of these consumers. And so that's the point where it's going to take longer to determine who's eligible for what subsidy, and then sending that information to the U.S. Treasury, who then sends that subsidy to the carrier that the individual has chosen. So it's not an easy process, and technology is not always the answer to resolving these types of issues.
Noam, can we confirm that 80% are going through fine, that it's just 20%, which is still a big number, that need that hands-on sort of call center attention? What percent of hands-on attention can the whole system handle and not choke it?
So the short answer is no. We can't on the outside confirm that. I mean, I've been speaking with various organizations around the country that are helping people enroll in health insurance. There are grantees that have gotten federal monies to help people navigate through this process. And, you know, what I've heard back from them is that they have gotten more and more of their people they work with able to get through this. I was chatting with someone in Florida who works on this, the largest grantee in Florida. They have gotten about 70%, they said, of the people they've worked with in November through the website. So that may be the only way independently perhaps to validate it, but it's not obviously a scientific methodology to just simply check with people who are working with the system.
Let's go to Jerry in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I was on the site yesterday. I figured that I'd wait and see if there was an easier way to get in, and I was encouraged by news reports yesterday that there had been a fix put in, so I gave it a shot. I'll just say that the experience on the website was hugely frustrating. The data didn't stick that I was putting in. I had to re-enter it numerous times. Finally, everything seemed to be ready to go,
yeah.
And I put in my username and passwords with invalid data. I then talked to somebody on the help desk. This person on the help desk tried to do the thing for me. That didn't work. The person on the help desk finally admitted that the system had crashed. I mean, I'm just wondering, you know, did the people that designed the system think it all through? And from the comments I've been hearing, I'm in the 20%. That's probably going to have a hard time.
Jerry, do you have a very complicated, I don't want to get into your personal business, but do you have a complicated package of issues, or do you feel?
No. Mm-hmm. No, I'm a normal, healthy male. I have high blood pressure, but that's it. I don't have anything else.
Right.
I don't have 12 kids in my family.
Right, right.
Thank God I don't have four or more. Then I guess I'd be a problem for the system to analyze. However, if a corporation tried to launch this kind of product, they would probably be sued or run out of business.
Hey, Jerry, hang on for a second. Dan, what are you thinking in Salt Lake City as you hear Jerry's troubles in Oklahoma?
Well, I think Jerry said it best. He's going to be one of those 20% that encounters a problem that's outside the realm of what I spoke about.
But why would he, if he doesn't have a particularly complicated personal situation, what would throw him into that 20%?
There's a variety of things. He may have tried to enroll at a point where the system was being inundated by a large number of consumers trying to enroll at the same time. There could have been a technical glitch that his specific scenario hadn't been addressed. It's from the outside looking in, it's really hard to determine what caused Jerry's problems.
Jerry, wish you good luck. Dan, does it feel at this point like a system that can get to the place where it can trundle forward, even if it's not, you know, at light speed, but with enough volume that the whole thing can work?
That's a great question. You know, 80% of the consumers enrolling on the platform in a real-time scenario is definitely a good metric. The other 20% will have to go through the call center. 50,000 concurrent enrollees. If we extrapolate and forecast out, that's about 1.5 million a month if the system is actually able to sustain that type of enrollment over the next 4 months. It's, I think, time will tell. I don't think we'll have a good idea of how successful these improvements have been until we have some more metrics over the next couple of days or a week or so, and when we see the enrollment numbers come in and if these fixes have actually made a difference. From my, again, looking from the outside in, the testing I did over the weekend, the platform is functioning and performing far better than it did on October 1st. I didn't encounter any errors going through the process. I didn't, to be honest, go all the way through the process.
Yeah.
But
it's that definitely... last point where they say, start over, that's when people tear their hair out and maybe call their congressperson. Stand by, Dan. Amanda in Athens, Georgia. Amanda, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I appreciate you asking for real experiences because I live in a college town of 20 to 30-somethings.
Yes.
And most of those people are just too discouraged by the news to even attempt to get on the website. I've been on it. I've been pleased at the availability of help I've received.
Okay.
And I posted on Facebook that I went to the website and had an easy time, and I've had so many people in their 20s and 30s asking me about my experience just because they're too discouraged to even try. So
do you think, you hear the word coming out of the White House, you know, majority are going to be fine. Does that sound, do you feel that there's a message out there that's positive enough now to maybe turn some of those of your peers in age around, Amanda, or are they just going to sit on the bleachers and wonder and wait?
I hope so. I think it's kind of similar to other people where they're kind of waiting to see the, you know, kinks get worked out and then go in. But I think hearing all these, I think the discouraging stories rise to the top about how it's not working, and the success stories are not, you know.
Are you signed up now, Amanda? You said you went on. Are you signed up?
I am. I found out my eligibility, and I'm just waiting to figure out if I need to enroll with my husband or if we need to do separate. They've been very helpful. Live chat has been very helpful, and call centers have been helpful.
How old are you, if I may ask?
I am 33.
33, and do you know what it's going to cost you and your husband?
We qualify for subsidies, and it's about like $119 a month, $119. So it's not, you know, having no insurance and then having the option to have insurance, that's pretty exciting.
That sounds like a pretty attractive rate. Of course, you're only 33, but even so... if people start hearing that kind of number, maybe it will draw them in. Amanda, good luck to you. Noam, there's the kind of story that, I mean, she looks around and doesn't see a lot of young people rushing to get on, but $119 for a couple, even at that age, surely that's an attractive rate.
I think it is. And I mean, the indications we've seen from around the country is that there are a lot of health plans available for prices that seem pretty competitive, even under $100. In some cases, the issue, I think, going forward for folks is, particularly people who haven't had insurance, to sort of assess what that covers, what it doesn't cover, how big is the deductible, and so forth. For people who don't have insurance at all, that may be a shock. On the other hand, you know, for some of those people who've had to pay out of pocket for everything and lived with the anxiety, that may be a major benefit. But I do think we're going to hear more stories like Amanda. There's no question as this site gets fixed.
How long does this go on being a sort of teetering viability issue, Noam? I mean, is it like fish are cut bait in a couple of months? Will 6 months from now we still be debating whether Obamacare is kicking in and taking hold? How long does this go on?
I would say until 2017.
Oh, gee. Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding.
I mean,
I think because I know we're running short of time here, but, you know, into next year, beginning of next year, people are going to begin experiencing their health insurance. There's going to be some people pleased. There are going to be some people who are not happy about it. That's going to generate a whole nother raft of debate. We go into next year's midterm elections. It's going to be another issue. In the next fall, we're going to see what are the premiums looking like in 2015. Did the right mix of people come in? Did too many sick people come in next year?
Yeah.
So will rates be out of control in 2015? And into the 2016 presidential election, I think this still is going to be a major issue for the Republican Party. And depending on who wins the 2016 presidential election, I think we may very well have a major revisitation of Obamacare in the next presidential administration.
Noam Levy with the Los Angeles Times. You leave us with a mind-boggling prospect of years of wondering how this goes on. But we will learn, I guess, with every week and month that it does. We're very grateful to you for being with us today. Thanks so much for joining us, Noam.
My pleasure.
And Dan Schuyler at Levitt Partners in Salt Lake City. Dan, thank you very much for your insights today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Good luck, everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.